The following presentation of the Midland City Council will begin in a moment. The Midland City Council is the city's legislative body that sets policies, approves budgets, determines tax rates, and adopts ordinances and resolutions to govern the city. It is made up of 5 elected officials that represent the wards in which they reside, and councilmen are elected to 2-year terms. The mayor is elected from among the council members by vote of the city council. City Council meetings are held at 7 p.m. 2 Mondays per month in Council Chambers at City Hall. This presentation is provided by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland. Replays of this meeting can be found on MGTV Channel 188 on Charter Spectrum, through Channel 99 on AT&T UVerse, or on demand at www.cityofmidlandmi.gov. Select meetings are available on MCTV Network's Government Affairs Podcast Channel.
Good evening and welcome to our April 8th, 2024 meeting of City Council. Please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Lacey, will you please call roll?
Honorable Mayor Donker.
Here.
Councilman Brown Wilhelm.
Here.
Councilman Wozbinski.
Here.
Councilman Arnosky. Councilman Solar.
Both gentlemen send their regrets that they're not able to be here this evening. Okay, that takes us to our conflict of interest. Does anyone on council have a conflict of interest with anything that's on this evening's agenda?
No, Madam Mayor.
Okay, very good. Then we'll move on to the consent agenda. All resolutions marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and will be enacted by one motion. There'll be no separate consideration of these items unless a council member or citizen so requests during the discussion stage or the motion to adopt the consent agenda is indicated. If there's even a single request, the item will be removed from the consent agenda without further motion and considered in its listed sequence and regular fashion. Would anyone from council like an item removed from the consent agenda?
No. No, Madam Mayor.
Anyone from the public like an item removed from the consent agenda?
14.
Number 14. Okay, anyone else? All right then. Can we have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So move.
Second.
First and second, any discussion? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, that passes 3-0. All right, that takes us down to a public hearing this evening. We have one public hearing. Oh no, I'm sorry. We are pulling, this is no longer on the agenda because we have no, do you wanna just comment on this?
Certainly, so on the agenda was a show cause hearing for two Michigan Liquor Control Commission license holders in the city of Midland for the non-payment of property taxes. Prior to tonight's show cause, scheduled show cause hearing, both property owners have paid their taxes in full to the county treasurer, and therefore tonight's show cause hearing is not needed.
Okay. Thank you very much for that explanation. All right, now that takes us down to public comment. This is an opportunity for people to address council on issues relevant to council business, but not on this evening's agenda. Is there any public comment this evening? Okay, seeing none, then we'll move on. And it takes us to item number 4, which is the introduction of our budget. Ms. Stilwell's here to tell us about that.
Good evening. Tonight is the presentation of the 24-25 budget. This is just to receive the budget, and we will get into details of that at a later date. So just a reminder of those dates. Today we present the budget book. Next Monday, the 15th, we will have a work session on the book. The 22nd will be our first public hearing. The 13th of May will be the second and mandated public hearing. May 20th will be the budget adoption, and then we enact it on July 1st. To review this document, it will be available in print form in the city clerk's office. And tomorrow it will be posted on the website of the city. So to comment on this, you can come to the public hearings, which is again, April 22nd and May 13th. You may also call the comment line, 837-3400, email at cityhall@midlandmi.org, or you can mail to the City Hall. So this is just kind of a brief overview. Our budget goals are always to ensure economic stability, provide an outstanding quality of life, and provide effective stewardship of the community's resources. The directives that were set forward by council for this budget was no reductions in service levels, the millage rate to stay at 15.1358385 mills, with an additional 0.5 mills if necessary, extra funding to the two pension funds, as well as Barstow Airport and the landfill. Also to increase from uncommitted at the end of the year money into the budget stabilization reserve, and to establish a building improvement fund for any future renovation or expansions. So this budget shows no increase in the total rate for millage. We did not use the 0.5 that the council gave us direction if we needed it. The tax roll increased by 6.22%, which is one reason why we did not need to increase that millage rate. Payroll costs are continuing to increase based on added positions and inflation. Again, we're giving $500 to the MERS, which is the general pension fund, and this year we will see the effect of that, meaning in 2024 we'll see the effect of that state grant as well. We continue to see inflation in our capital purchases. For Concept 5, we will see $21.9 million in the 24-25 budget and $8.5 million in the projected 25-26, which should bring us to the end of the Concept 5. PPT reimbursement, we're budgeting 40% less than what we have a potential to receive. And then continue to see a planned reduction in the support to the Curry Golf Course. And the debt service, the only thing we will see on there for 25 is the interest on the SRF for Concept 5, because the principal does not begin until the project is finished and then we have the final numbers. Future challenges, as in the past, is the parking fund. We do not have steady staffing to get a revenue stream from the enforcement. However, since we did lease the entire second floor, that has improved, improved revenue in the parking structure. The landfill has quite a large capital expenditure that will be hitting next year, but we are gearing up for that. And the library has large capital need for roof replacement next year as well. That is challenging on how we're going to fund that. Unfunded liabilities continue to be an issue, as well as overall inflation. So the resolution for tonight is to receive and file the budget for public examination. It directs the city clerk to post notices for both the public hearings, and it directs the city clerk to publish comparative budget summary. Our next meeting is Monday, April 15th. It is the budget workshop at 6 p.m. And that is it.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions?
It's just one. I know we're going to go into details later, but why did we budget 40% less for PPT?
It is how we have done it for the last few years. They have started giving us this extra payment in May, so we don't know if we're going to get that extra payment.
So we'd just be pleasantly surprised.
What we know is going to come, or expect to come, because they don't have a good calculator on what to expect anyway. But then that has always been an extra payment. Kind of a bonus, and we use that for different items that we, in fact, the budget directives actually have some of that coming out of that amount.
Thank you.
So if you'll recall on that, we've had discussions specifically about that in previous years, and part of what Laurel is saying is that, number one, we don't know the exact number, so it's a bit of a guess, and we have a reasonable assurance of the number that we use in our budget. There is excess PPT reimbursement that we have been lucky enough to receive now for a number of years, but that could change at any point in time. There's no guarantee or assurance that that will come. Mm-hmm. And to be conservative and to make sure that the budget is based upon numbers that we know we can meet, for that specific reason, we have gone conservative, quite yep. frankly, in the use yep. of that number, with the balance typically dropping into reserve funds through your authorization and budget directives.
Makes sense.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, thank you. Are there any questions from public on this? All right, I think we're set.
Okay. Thank you.
Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution acknowledges receipt of the city manager's proposed budget for the 2024-25 fiscal year, orders the same to be placed on file for public examination at City Hall and posted on the city's website, directs the city clerk to publish notice of public hearings as previously approved by council at its December 18th, 2023 regular meeting, and directs the city clerk to publish a comparative summary of the budget.
All right, can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So move.
Second.
Second, any discussion on this? All right, then let's vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, that passes 3-0. All right, that takes us now down to item number 5, which is amendments to the draft master plan, and Mr. Kane is here to tell us about that.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I was anticipating having the short presentation tonight, but I guess I was wrong. So. Here tonight to provide a brief update on where we're at with Midland City Modern. So let's jump right in. So council will recall that back in September of last year, we were able to release the draft master plan to the website. So it was completed. We wanted to get it out to the community as quick as we could. At that point, we were at about the 2.5 year mark of working on the master plan, and so we knew the community was anxious to see it. We were anxious to share it with the community, so we were able to get it out there right after Labor Day last year. The Planning Commission made their official referral of the plan to you later that month. That's part of the process that's outlined in the Michigan Planning Enabling Act. At the end of September, we met in joint session, the Planning Commission and City Council, to talk through the plan. We had a very long conversation about different aspects of the plan, got some really great feedback from that conversation that we were able to integrate into some of what you'll see tonight. Ultimately, City Council, again, in accordance with the Michigan Planning Enabling Act, released the plan for a 63-day review and comment period. So the statute requires a 63-day period where we provide noticing to certain entities that are described in the law, and we also invite general public comment and feedback. So again, certain agencies like adjacent jurisdictions, the Road Commission, MDOT, utility companies are required under the Act to receive notices at different stages of the process, including at that release for public review and comment. Because we wanted to encourage members of the general public to participate in this process and to provide us with their feedback, we went back out, as we did through the whole plan development process, to the community, out in the community, to get their feedback. We had 2 open house events. 3 presentations. We held 4 one-on-one with a planner events, which I'm sure were more exciting than they sound, but a chance for us to sit down at different settings around the community and talk through people's particular questions or comments on the plan. And then we did have a virtual Q&A event hosted through Facebook and also simulcast through MCTV. So all the comments that we were able to gather through that process, there was a little bit of bleed over past the 63-day review and comment period, and we still have a comment capturing tool on our website. So as comments come in, we continue to review them. But basically, shortly after the 63-day review comment period ended, we gathered all those comments together and provided them to the Planning Commission. Ultimately, we had 25 specific written comments on the plan, plus additional comments that were obtained either through our joint meeting, through Planning Commission conversation, or through other conversations with members of the public at our in-person events. Those comments range anything from we love this plan to we hate this plan, really broad general comments on the document, to specific support or opposition to elements within the plan, to very specific comments regarding the text, so suggested amendments, in some cases just asking us to look at language, in other cases providing us with specific language that was desired. Ultimately, we took all that information through a process with the Planning Commission, and they prepared and endorsed 62 specific amendments to the plan. Those were recommended forward by the Planning Commission, and so we wanted to bring those forward to you to give you an update on where we're at. The source of those comments is noted, so that comes from some from staff through our review of the draft, or our conversations with members of the public, some from you all on council, some from the members of the Planning Commission. So a pretty good cross-section of the community represented in the comments we're responding to with this update. Where we'll go from here is to integrate these amendments into the draft plan, so that we can bring a final draft back to the public and begin the next steps in the adoption process. We anticipate that we should be able to complete that plan preparation yet this month and have the plan released to the community no later than the beginning of May. We anticipate the Planning Commission will set the public hearing on the master plan at their meeting on May 14th, so that would be the next step prescribed under the Michigan Planning Enabling Act. They would then hold a public hearing on the plan at their meeting on June 11th. At any point after holding that public hearing, including the night of June 11th, the Planning Commission could entertain a motion to adopt the plan. Adopting the plan does require an affirmative vote of 2/3 of the Planning Commission membership, so we would need 6 affirmative votes in order to adopt the plan. After that is when actually the really fun part of Midland City Modern starts, which is turning the plan into reality by working on implementation. And so the Planning Commission, as part of this review process, prepared some recommendations related to implementation, what their priorities will be in the initial implementation period. And so I'll just go through those really quickly. These will be integrated into the draft plan so that the public's aware of what those early priorities are. The first is to undertake a comprehensive update to the city zoning ordinance. This shouldn't come as a surprise to City Council. We've budgeted for that already. That is something that a number of the goals and strategies in the plan relate back to our zoning ordinance. And so really wrapping all of those items and issues up into a comprehensive update to our ordinance, which was adopted in 2005, will help us to contemporize our regulations and align them with the master plan. Second is to work with city engineering to update our capital improvement plan so that we can achieve the street and sidewalk repair goals that are outlined within the master plan. Third is to complete our process with the Redevelopment Ready Communities Program to obtain certification. So that's, again, something that's been ongoing between the city and MEDC for many, many years that we'd like to see brought to completion. Four is to partner with community agencies and private developers to create affordable, accessible housing opportunities throughout the community. So no surprise there. I think either housing was something we heard a lot about through this process, and the Planning Commission believes that should be a priority in implementation. And then finally, reviewing our current stormwater ordinance and developing recommendations that reflect stormwater management best practices and local conditions, and adopting and implementing updated regulations. Again, I don't think these implementation priorities were a surprise to me. I hope they're not a surprise to you. I don't think they'd be a surprise to the community. These were some of the top things that we heard about over the last 3 years through this process, and we've certainly heard about all of these issues through a number of other channels as well in recent years. So tonight, the resolution in front of you will receive and file the recommended amendments to the plan as provided by the Planning Commission, and it requires a 3/5 vote. I'd welcome any questions from City Council. Mayor Dunker.
All right, does anyone have any questions?
So just kind of give a confirmation on what's happening here is, if somebody wants to do a change in this now, I mean, they need to let you know pretty quick, because the next thing that happens is the Planning Commission votes on it, and that's the final decision. It's not coming back to council, right?
That's correct. So at this point in the process, the Planning Commission under the Michigan Planning Enabling Act is the body that adopts the plan. They've adopted our current master plan. They've adopted prior master plans. And so this would be our next time before council, and the master plan will hopefully be regarding those implementation steps.
So just to get the word out there, do it quickly.
Now, I will say, too, we have had one of the things I appreciated coming into Midland as a new staff member and as a planner is that the Midland master plan has always gone through regular review and update. There is a long track record of that going way, way back in our archives of the master plan being routinely updated. That is exceptionally unusual, not just in Michigan, but around the country. And so it's fully our intention that Midland City Modern is going to be a living document, as every prior master plan for the city of Midland has been. So I don't want to create a perception that once this plan's adopted, it'll be 20 years before you get a cut at it. I would anticipate, for better or worse, as soon as this plan's adopted, we'll begin thinking about the next update to it. So.
And you answered my question already. So it was around the zoning and if it would be reviewed and updated after the master plan's adopted. And I heard you say yes, that will happen. So
that's correct.
Good.
Can I ask some questions about the list?
Sure.
I had an opportunity to meet with Brad and did ask him a couple questions, but there's one that, like, item number 14. Okay, what is KIK?
Oh, yeah.
W stands for?
They're basically the call numbers for the airport. So if you think about going to DTW, being at Detroit, we wanted to, originally the goals of the master plan were focused only on Jack Barstow Airport. We subsequently had conversations with the staff at MBS International Airport, given that it's partially owned by the city of Midland. We felt it was important to reflect some of their goals and objectives as well. And we wanted to differentiate between the two airports. And so that was a shorthand way of abbreviating Jack Barstow Airport, since that is essentially its formal abbreviation.
Okay.
And then the item just after that was, it made it sound like the city of Midland owns the property for MBS, the way that was worded, if you look at that amendment. I just wanted to make sure. I know we're a partial, there's three entities that take care of that, but it was after that. Could you read that?
I'm looking for it right now.
I'm not sure I'm seeing what you're saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Comment 15 is related to Jack Barstow. There's a comment later regarding, or I think we clarified that the city is an owner of MBS, and that might be what you're referring to. Under comment number 60, MBS is a tri-government facility owned and operated by the city of Midland.
Yep.
Yeah, it just makes it sound like we are the owners, but we're a partial owner, aren't we?
Yep.
I guess that was just a side comment on that.
So. We can contextualize that to add the other owners of the airport so that it's clear.
Thank you.
That's easily done.
Okay, so number... Oh.
I'm sorry.
You finish what you're doing.
No, go ahead.
Okay, so like number 18. There were some, you know, strikeouts. So is this just really... And it was from a community member, so I'm just curious, is that... just because they didn't like the language, or there's something additional there when it goes from, you know, naming public and private parking lots to just areas? Are we talking, what does areas mean? Or is that more than parking lots, or what exactly is that?
Yeah, so the comment, that, if I recall, the specific comment was that there are no public parking lots in the Ashman Circle area. I believe the original goal intent from the Planning Commission here was to address areas including Ashman Circle itself, which has parking within it, and making sure that that was properly kept up to date. And so as part of responding to the comment, we struck the public and private piece and just contextualized as parking areas rather than lots to address things like on-street parking or on-circle parking, so that the comment was a little bit broader than the manner in which it was originally drafted.
Okay, and then item number 26, you strike the word civility out of that, and I have a real concern about that.
Sure.
I mean, civility is something that it's a conversation we have all the time. We talk about it at a state level. We've talked about it here, so why are we striking that?
So we had a very long conversation about that with Ms. Craig, and the word civility for some folks is a charged term. If you think about civilization or uncivilized people, for some folks take that as having a meaning behind it that other folks don't. And so as we discussed that and looked at the other the other statements here about collaboration, connection, and cooperation, as staff, we felt confident that those three terms encapsulated the intent behind the word civility in this case. And so it didn't seem to be adding much value. And knowing that people read things differently, and there were folks who read that and thought that civility implies something different for them than it maybe would for me, that it was worth honoring that difference, and it wasn't adding value. So I can appreciate, for me, civility has a different meaning, and I am encouraged by the interest our community expressed in maintaining civility in our public discourse, and we wanted to honor that, and I think we still have without using the term. But that's the backstory on that, why that amendment was proposed.
Okay, I have a curiosity question. You said as we were going through this process, there were some that loved the plan and others who hated it. Did they give a reason as to why they were opposing it?
So those comments were relatively few, and generally, no, they did not. So we had a fairly significant amount of comments could probably be classified as those that didn't necessarily prompt action. So mm-hmm. it might just be, you know, we might get a comment about, you know, we'll just call it topic X. So mm-hmm. there's topic X covered in the plan, and we might get a comment that says, this plan says too much about topic X. And then we very often, in most of those cases, got a separate comment that says, this plan doesn't say enough about topic X. Mm-hmm. As a planner, I sometimes think that's probably a good sign, because if you've got your extreme ends feeling like they haven't seen what they like on both sides, you probably found a good middle ground. A few comments just said, I don't think this plan is good. And a few people said, I think this plan is amazing. Mm-hmm. Again, like not actionable. Right. We can't do anything with either comment, really. So we tried to focus on the comments where we were getting substantive feedback, even if it wasn't a complete directive to change this word to that word or add this. It may have just been an observation that was helpful and that we could respond to.
Okay, number 29. I know that was my comment. Said, oh, by the way, I really...
And we thank you for it.
Yeah, right. So, but there... So the whole damn thing just came out of there. I mean...
Correct. It
was, yeah, so...
Really the best solution and additional follow-up on that item. So we didn't just simply act because you questioned it. We acted to investigate, why was it in there? What was the sourcing of it? And does it align today with some of these goals and objectives were developed, you know, 18 plus months ago. And so for better or worse, the world keeps changing as we're creating the plan. And so things had changed to a point where that comment or that strategy no longer made sense. And there wasn't really a way to modify it that would continue to add value to the plan. So we felt it was best to strike it.
Okay, I'm going to go back to 16, back to the airport. And it talks about attract additional services to MBS, including support services for existing carriers. So can you give some examples of what those services would be that we would add?
Yeah, so there's a variety of things that they've expressed some interest in attracting. So something like a flight school or a training program can help to increase interest of other carriers in the airport. They've got a lot of great ideas at the administrative level at MBS about how to make the airport more attractive to passengers, but also to new potential carriers for passenger traffic. So this is left open-ended because, again, that will change over time, and there's a variety of different ways that that can be met, but that's just an example of one potential service.
So number 43, that some residential developments occur, park place should be provided. So we feel we have enough parks.
Well, we have some challenges in terms of actually regulating that. We also have other ways of achieving the goal of having usable open space for residents without calling those spaces a park or assuming public ownership of those spaces. So for instance, as we look to update our stormwater ordinance, one of the emerging trends in stormwater management, because it's becoming a more critical focus with climate change, is to make stormwater spaces multi-use. And so if you can create, for instance, an athletic field that's dry most of the year, but it can hold stormwater during a rain event, vice versa, a stormwater facility, for instance, within a newly platted neighborhood, if designed correctly, can serve as a recreational amenity for those residents. And so we still do have language in the plan around providing pedestrian connection to those areas so they can still function as open space that has utility to the neighboring residents without making the leap to the way that the Midland would have done it, you know, 50 years ago of mandating park space within a plat, which is no longer feasible for us to do.
Okay, maybe I don't mean to take us down a rabbit hole here, but now that you said it that way, as it relates to stormwater retention, can we do that in our existing parks? Use those for stormwater retention? Are we zoned that we can do that?
I don't believe so, and I would leave that question to the city attorney. But there are some limitations within our charter parks with regard to their utilization for general stormwater purposes. Certainly, we have to meet our own stormwater ordinance if we're doing a project within our parks. So if you have ancillary stormwater dealing with a parking lot in a park, that's one thing. But this would be more of looking in an opposite from an opposite perspective of you have public or common elements within a site condominium or a plat, that those common elements can also serve a recreational function if they're designed appropriately. So it could be wetland areas, it could be stormwater areas. There are other ways for us to achieve the traditional Midland neighborhood form where you do have that open space set aside without necessarily expecting or calling it a park or expecting public ownership.
Just to elaborate on that a little bit that Mr. Kane was getting at, there are two categories of parks within the city. One are those that we recognize within the charter that are specifically what we reference as charter parks. Mm-hmm. And those do have restrictions that they can only be used for park purposes unless there is a vote of the public to allow some other type of use. The second category are parks that are not recognized by the charter, more general in nature at that point in time, and we have more flexibility and can use those for a variety of purposes. So the distinction is simply whether the charter recognizes a specific park or does not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of, we have a lot of space, and it's nice if we could multi-use, you know, use it for multiple things more than just, you know, one thing. So whatever that means for us, we, those, that property is ours and gives us an opportunity to be creative around it, and we, I think we can be creative.
So. Absolutely. Well, and even in their current form, our parks offer a lot of resilience benefit to the community. That's going back to our very first city master plan called for us to acquire land along the river to help us be more flood resilient. They, of course, didn't use the word resilient in 1928, but that was the purpose, was to make sure that we flooded structures less frequently, and public ownership was a way to do that, while also recognizing that spending time along the river can be a nice experience, and there's opportunities there that come with public ownership. And so we can continue. Our parks today already provide us with a lot of resilience benefits, and there are certainly opportunities to expand on those benefits moving forward.
Thanks. Well, I enjoyed reading that all of those comments and the responses to those.
Good.
Yeah.
I hope the Planning Commission and staff took the public's feedback very seriously, and we believe that this feedback will make the plan a better plan than it was when it was originally introduced.
All right, any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any comments from the public? All right, seeing none, then Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution receives and files amendments to the draft City of Midland Master Plan prepared by the Planning Commission.
Okay, can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Any discussion on this?
I'd just like to say I think Mr. Kane and the Planning Commission did an exceptional job pulling this together, meeting with the community to obtain feedback. And one of the things I have to say I really, really appreciate is the focus on housing, you know, increasing our inventory as well as diversifying and attracting new businesses. Even the businesses that are here, we keep hearing regularly how they're trying to hire a significant number of people. There's a lack of housing here. We have other companies that are saying we have a significant number of people retiring. We need to backfill. Where are they going to come from? So recognizing this is an opportunity for our community is exceptional, and just want to say thank you, and we support you.
Okay. Ready to vote? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that passes 3-0. All right, that takes us now down to item number 14, which has to do with the mill and overlay. I was going to say mill and fill, but mill and overlay or overlay.
Yeah, mill and overlay.
Yes, either one. Mill and fill, mill and overlay, both terms that are used. So if in front of you this evening is a recommendation to accept a bid from Central Asphalt of Mount Pleasant for our 2024 mill and overlay program. This is a program that is a surface treatment program targeted towards streets that are generally beginning to exhibit signs of deterioration. It enables us to mill, bring a mill machine in, take off the top portion of the asphalt surface on the roadway, and replace it with a fresh surface with the idea of sealing cracks, preventing intrusion of water into the road surface as well as the road bed, which will ultimately enable us to preserve that road and forestall reconstruction for several years. And so this year our bids came in very close to estimate. So our original bid project list is the one in front of you tonight, recommended forward. And we're just looking for your vote to award that contract to Central Asphalt.
Okay. All right. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Kane?
Thank you.
Very good. Any comments from the public?
Yes. The reason I brought it up was, I was pleased to see they wanted to do my street, or 6106 Sturgeon Creek Parkway, Midland, Michigan. Okay, one of the...
I gotta make you do it every meeting, John.
Huh?
I said, I know we have to make you do it every meeting.
Yeah, it's okay. I know you know me by now. I was pleased to see that they had Sturgeon Creek Parkway on there. However, I'm kind of a pragmatic person. I like to spend my money wisely. I go up and down that street all the time, many times. I live on it. And that street was done about between 10 and 15 years ago. At the time, the winter before that, we had tons of water breaks, okay? And that continued on for when we were through that cold snap a few years ago. There's many cold days. We had a lot of water line breakages. So I went out there when they actually did the road, and I asked them why they didn't put in a water line while they were doing the road. They said it wasn't in the budget. So I was kind of surprised because we had quite a lot of more water breaks since that time. It hadn't been bad the last couple of years. But if you're going to do a road, why you put in the water line when you're doing it? To me, you're going to tear up the road, put in another topping to the road. The road is in great shape. I go through this town all the time, and you see tons of roads that need attention. For instance, your road, Helen Street. That's horrible. Now my Dan Maxwell lives on Scott Street near Airport. That's terrible. I can pretty much tell you that everybody in this whole city can tell you about a terrible road someplace. But Sturgeon Creek Parkway is not that bad. And although I feel nice that you want to fix it for whatever that is, about a mile long, so it's probably $1 million or something in that area, or $750,000. I'd rather have you spend it on someplace that really needs it rather than our road. And then when you want to put in a water line, because we have so many water line breaks, that's the time to do it after you put in the water line, not tear it up and put in water line 2 years later. That doesn't make much sense to me. So that's the only reason I'm bringing that up is, well, I just don't want to see us spending money just because I don't even know if anybody from the engineering department, actually the engineer that was working for the city, lives on that street. So, and he still lives on that street. He's not with the city anymore. But if you ever went up and down the road, you wouldn't say there's anything really wrong with it. So I just hate to see us spend money foolishly. Thank you.
Read the resolution.
Well, it might be appropriate to, Mr. Kane can come up and just respond to that, because those are certainly issues that the engineering and planning department and others look at before roads are selected, so.
So I can, just broad strokes. So first I'll address the issue of terrible roads. I agree, Helen, not great. There's some others in the community that are nearing the point where reconstruction's appropriate. For better or worse, mill and overlay is a treatment that you do make to roads that are in pretty good condition. If you want to prevent their deterioration to the point of a terrible street, you have to intervene early or you really lose the benefit of doing it. And so I understand that as a layperson, a member of the community, that sometimes seems counterintuitive, but that's the reality. That's why we're aggressively shifting our budget priorities towards those treatments like mill and overlay, and even just our crack seal program. Things that we can do that will prevent water intrusion into the surface and base materials will get us more life out of a street. And the longer we can extend that life, the more we can hopefully improve the general condition of roads around the community, but also pivot to doing less reconstruction, because reconstruction is much more disruptive to the community and to the neighborhood and the residents, and it's much more expensive. We also can't combine a water main project with a mill and overlay, because we're not getting down to the base materials. We're not digging up the whole street. In most cases, a mill and overlay project, we're probably going to be in and out of that area in a couple weeks' time. So it's a much shorter duration project. Sturgeon Creek Parkway might be a little bit different given the length, but those are generally projects where we're in and out. So unfortunately, we can't pair those two together.
I appreciate you explaining that. I know that I couldn't explain it, but I really, that whole concept of how we manage roads and how you know, because once a road is dead, there's really no bringing it back to life, and you have to,
Full reconstruction,
yes. Full reconstruction. So the goal is to do what you can to keep the good roads good, and then, fix those really bad roads, which are major work both on the lines underneath and the road itself. So I know my Helen Street's going to be waiting for a while, but, it's just the way it is.
I would liken it to the roof on your home, something that everyone has experience with. About a month after I moved into my house, I had a leak through our ventilation in our bathroom. Very small leak, just a few drips of water. Would have been easy enough for me to ignore and say, maybe it'll never happen again. But I wanted to make sure that my home stays in good condition. So I had a roofer come out, take a look. They made some minor repairs, haven't had any water since. If you don't do that early intervention on a roof, you're gonna have serious problems in your home. If you don't do the early intervention with your road, it's the same thing. You're not gonna get the life out of it. And we wanna protect the investment we made in creating that road up front as best we can. And so that is in some cases going to mean that we're mill and overlaying streets that aren't the worst in the city. By default, they're never gonna be the worst roads in the city, because if we mill and overlay those streets, we're not gonna get any value out of that. We might get, we'll feel good for a year or two, but then that road's going to be back to where it started.
So this is a little crass maybe how I'm about to say that. A mill and fill on Helen Street would be lipstick on a pig.
Or good money after bad. It would get us.
We'd have spent the money and it's going to look that bad again shortly.
Yeah, unfortunately, you have to be very methodical about these interventions and timing them correctly. And if you miss the window where the intervention makes the most sense, it really, at that point, doesn't make sense to make that investment. You're really just waiting out the lifespan of the road. And sometimes, like with the example of Sturgeon Creek Parkway, we don't always have a good water main sometimes we have a good water main under a bad road. Sometimes we have a bad water main under a good road. Usually we're somewhere on that spectrum. It doesn't always align perfectly, but that all plays into why making decisions about where to spend our road funds is complicated, because we have to consider all of those factors. And it does sometimes mean that a road that is not the worst in town gets prioritized over one that is, because its water main is worse than the water main under the other road. And so we have to think through how we align our priorities so that we can address things when they need to be addressed as best we can.
Madam Mayor, it might be helpful if Mr. Kane also talked a little bit about how the water department integrates with the engineering department as they're selecting road projects.
Sure. So when we prioritize roads, that is for reconstruction or resurfacing. Those decisions aren't made by the engineering department in a vacuum. That is from the very beginning a conversation between the water department and the engineering department, and sometimes other departments, about what our infrastructure needs are, what is our top priority? What funding do we have available? What can we afford to do in the upcoming 6-year period of the plan? And so we're working together hand in hand through that process. Sometimes we get surprises year to year. Sometimes a road that we think really needs to be desperately reconstructed turns out it has a little bit more life in it, and so we can bump it out. Sometimes things look like they're okay, and then the next year, whoa, we had a rough winter and they don't look so good, and so we have to move them up. But we're in those conversations all year round, really. Water department is obviously seeing changes in their water system, and they're having water breaks and things that they'll bring to our attention, and they'll say, hey, as we get into next year, we're going to need to look at this. We may need to move this project up. We may need to add this project to the list. And again, vice versa. Maybe something was problematic for a period of time, and then it's quiet, and we go, okay, maybe we should let this ride for a couple years and focus on something else that's a more emergent issue. So it's complicated. We've got a lot of square miles of city and a lot of miles of road and water line to maintain, and only so many funds and so many contractors to spread around. And so we do the best we can to hit the things that will get us the most bang for the buck and address the most major issues in the community.
So when do you think we'll start construction? Actual construction. I mean, today's felt like summer was on its way.
Mill and overlay?
Well, for just, in general.
We will likely see some of our street projects kick off in the next month, maybe even the next couple weeks, depending on contractor mobilization. We do have some projects approved tonight that are a July 1 start date, their next fiscal year projects. So, for instance, Mill and Overlay will likely start on or around July 1. Some of those projects that are near schools, we will aim to have wrapped up before the school year starts. Others will continue on through the end of the construction season in the fall. So we'll have information. We do provide construction updates daily on our website. And so as projects begin, that'll be a great place for folks, including members of council, to find updates on each of those projects, the contractors involved, and where we are in the process.
All right. Speaking of contractors, what if they leave it worse than it was before they started? I mean, we know the situation in 4 and 5, but have we done anything differently with these new contracts that are being put in place?
That's a great question. So one of the things that we know we struggled with last year was inspection services. And so we do, this evening, council did approve us to enter into a contract with Road Professional Services out of Mount Pleasant. We've already had conversations with them about our desire to improve the oversight of our construction projects so that we can make sure that everything from maintenance of traffic activities to the final work product of the contractors is at the level that not only meets our minimum requirements but meets the community's expectations. So I think that I'm anticipating that that will have an effect this year on the quality of our project outcomes. Sometimes, unfortunately, in the current environment with as much infrastructure money as is available, and given our location in the state, we're not always in a position where we have a tremendous amount of options for road contractors. And I think on some recent projects that lack of contractor availability is shown through, because you may end up with a contractor that's not of the highest quality, because they're just simply the high quality contractors are already spoken for, mm-hmm. Particularly for projects like the one you're referencing, where it's a road treatment that we don't do a lot of, and other road commissions or cities may do a tremendous amount more work in that area than we do. And so those contracts are more lucrative and more attractive to the larger, more professional firms. So you'll know we are pivoting our approach to reflect some of that, those issues with contractor availability, and also just the nature of certain treatments. You don't get as uniform a end product. And so our mill and overlay is an example. We've expanded that program because with mill and overlay, you generally get a very consistent end product that's high quality. It does cost a little bit more money, but we think the trade-off is worth it to get the quality of product people expect.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Good road discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Lacey, will you please read the resolution?
This resolution authorizes the mayor and city clerk to execute a contract with Central Asphalt, Inc. in the amount of $1,390,230 for pavement, mill, and overlay work on various streets and locations throughout the city. This resolution also authorizes the city manager to approve change orders in an aggregate amount not to exceed $100,000.
Can we have a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
First and second. Any more discussion on this? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that passes 3-0. All right, that takes us now to new business. I just have one thing. Before I ask you if you have anything?
I have none this evening.
Okay, so seeing we were talking about airports, you know, we do have a council member who is on the MBS airport. I think he's the chair of the committee.
He is the current chair,
yeah,
yes.
I think maybe we should have a report.
We can do that. So I sit on that as well. So
yeah.
both Councilman Arnosky and I are two of the three city representatives on that. But we can certainly have the airport director come in and speak to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that the public, you know, when we often have the command when we have our annual planning session. But I think the community, you know, that's certainly interest in that, and it'd be nice if we could, you know, figure out a time when it would be appropriate to do that.
And certainly bring Mr. Kander, who's the airport director, in and have him give an overview of ongoing actions, challenges,
sure,
certainly with the airport as well, and then the activities that they're taking to try to continue to build the revenues at the airport.
Great, thanks. And maybe could they explain to you a little bit how it works? Because I think they just, people don't understand. Well, I don't understand. You know, how do you get more airlines in here?
Oh,
you know,
yep.
If they could just do a little, you know, airport primer, so we can, we'll all, you know, have the information, and people might have a better perspective on it.
Okay.
I have an item for
okay.
new business. Okay, so as we were, I was reviewing the packet, and when it comes to these show cause hearings, one of the questions I had is, if they're a repeat offender, and which one was, I know when they finally pay their property taxes, there's interest in additional rates. But you know what? We're using a lot of staff time to track down delinquent tax payments, emails, certified letters, preparing for the show cause hearing. So I'm just wondering, do we also add some type of charge to recoup staff time for all the time that they actually spend taking care of these?
Do we charge a late fee right now for that at
for
all?
For taxes.
Yep, just same as anyone who
right.
is delinquent or past due on their tax payment date.
And so what is a percentage, right?
It is a percentage. I don't know
I
it off
remember
the top
what
of my
it
head.
Is off, yeah.
So up to per se, if you're 5% if it's first offense, 10% if it's second, can you do that?
I'm going to look that way because Mr. Kamara was the one that was put in charge of having to run this down and run it through his office. I don't know that he's researched that, but we can if he's not aware of that.
Yeah, thank you, Councilman Brian Wilman, for recognizing that. It is a considerable amount of staff time
mm-hmm.
To follow up. So one of the requirements under our ordinance is that all liquor license holders are current with their property taxes. And so we pull the reports, and any property owner or business that is behind on their property taxes, it results in letters, and then takes up council time as well. We have to set the show cause, and we have to send mailings out to all of the members of the companies as well to inform them of the show cause date. We have to set the show cause date. Attorney's office has to prepare for that, much like we were prepared to proceed this evening. But the way the ordinance is written, there is no specific penalty per se for not being current on your property taxes other than what all property owners would pay if they're delinquent on their taxes. As what happened today when the business owners, they pay, and it then cancels the show cause hearing. And that's, as we sit here today, that is the formal procedure and kind of the cost of the city doing business.
So I think for the first time, it'd be a grace period. But if you keep doing it, there needs to be something to hold them accountable to not be doing this every tax season. That's just my thought.
So, I mean, I would, for the sake of conversation, certainly this is a different industry, which, you know, has, it's a different industry, and we have control over that liquor license, where we wouldn't have control, a if I don't pay my taxes, I'll just keep having an inflated interest payment until I pay them, which they would too, right? So obviously it's not enough to, I mean, but we have this, also this liquor license thing that goes along with that. So, I mean, we don't have that over a sporting goods store.
Correct. Yes, and this is a license that's necessary in order for many businesses to be able to conduct their business. So it certainly affects them in a different way than a property owner who is not required to have a specialty license, which is a liquor license that's tied to being current on property taxes.
I think the frustration is that usually people change behavior after one time, and this behavior has not changed.
So I'd say think about it. What are some options? But I think it needs to be addressed. It should not be coming before us every 6 months.
We can certainly go back.
And the time that's being spent to prepare and do all the due diligence to get it to a show cause hearing.
Yeah, we can go back and we can calculate what the approximate average staff time is, because it is a lot of work, and my staff's time in preparing that, making sure that it is in compliance with the ordinance, also compliant with state law with regards to that. It is, I don't want to put a number on it, but hours would be an accurate reflection of that. We can certainly look at a way to recoup that and present something to the council and by way of ordinance amendment.
Any other new business? Right,
I'll be the odd man out this time.
All right. See, no, then we're adjourned. Thank you, everyone.